Welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. It's a Marler Monday on a Tuesday. What's up, buddy?
How are things, dude? How was Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was pretty anticlimactic. I mean, nothing but work. You know what? How about you?
It was not anticlimactic. It was very busy. A lot of shit going on. happy to welcome Lane Kiffin to Baton Rouge.
What's it like being Kiffin's biggest fan?
I just always forget. I think, like, covering the sport, like, from a non... not doing it like SCS does, where it's like you have to actually go to the events and see the and meet the coaches. You're not just like doing it all from the couch and shit. I'll always forget just how fucking deranged fans are and like how like angry people get because it's like, and there's always like at least one thing a year that's like a reminder. And it's been insane. It's also just like what we said was going to happen at least here for like 2 weeks, and then it did, and I thought it was wild all the Ole Miss people thinking he was ever going to stay in the first place.
I don't know if anybody caught that, but Marler just tried to Big J journalism us with his boots on the ground reporting of the Lane Kiffin saga. So how was it? How was it shaking the man's hands? If you were a lady,
Brodo Baggins already said you get angry too, Brodo. There's not a part of your life. There's not a single fucking part of your life where for an hour a week you show up and have to read only negative bullshit comments about yourself. There's not. There's no part of your life where somebody's like, hey, sit in this chair and talk about your favorite thing. By the way, we're just going to fucking hurl insults at you for an hour for no fucking reason.
Well, that's where you're wrong, because I have Brodo out on Fridays. And he just catches hate from Big J journalists like you.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, good for him, man. Good for him. I don't tune into that show.
Was it worth all the hype? Was it?
It was awesome.
Did anybody run him off the road in Baton Rouge? That's question one. Where was the dog? Question two. Anything else?
I don't know. Brodo said he takes it like a real man. I bet you do. probably in the ass, brother. It was like him saying that he was run off the road in Oxford was like, he said it so like it was just like, it's like a subtle little comment. And it was like, did I hear that right? Did he say that somebody ran him off the road? It was weird.
His McElwain moment, death threats. Oh yeah. Hey, anywhere these guys go. I mean, maybe this is breaking news to some people. I don't think it is. Anywhere these damn guys go, they're getting police escort, especially when they're exiting the town, burning it down, sabotaging their current team that's about to make a playoff run. They get police escorts. So were they ramming the police off the road too?
So, you know, I think I'm going to operate from the standpoint of like, I'm not going to believe everything he says. I will choose to believe him until he does something that I deem non-believable. This is the same fan base, if we're talking about Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Same fan base where a bunch of their burner accounts ruined the life of a girl on social media for making up a fucking story about her sleeping with her like boyfriend's dad for no reason other than, hey, this is really funny. You see, just look at what we're capable of doing on social media behind faceless, nameless accounts. Like for no other reason than that, that's why they did it. And this is the same fan base that's now like, I can't believe Lane's doing this to us. To be honest, Oxford sounds pretty fucking toxic. It was amazing where he was when he was there. But the moment that he was like, I don't know, there's probably a better opportunity, which every logical Ole Miss fan knows. Yeah, these are better opportunities than we have in Oxford. He's done great and he took us to our peak. But like, these are still better opportunities outside of Oxford. And like, I've been to Oxford. Lovely place, but it saw just like how it would be at any fan base if it quickly turned, how quickly it can turn on, you know, like if something goes not their way. And listen, this is also every single time he has made an exit, it's been catastrophically bad. I was the Bama exit he made, where I was told from like around the program he was like making comments to Saban before the national title game. I'm the only reason you got here, blah, blah. And then Saban was like, okay, dude, like we've tried our best. See, no, she didn't. Like this, it's weird that we choose to be our worst versions of ourselves on social media when we don't, when we have anonymity to like veil any of the things we want to say. It genuinely makes me very upset that people are like, this, I mean, that girl's life was fucking ruined over nothing. So I know I'm on a soapbox here. I understand why Ole Miss fans would be mad, because every fan base acts that like reacts a certain way when they feel like jaded or feel like made to be less than other programs. But if we're all being honest, everyone here would not turn down $100 million. And if you got LSU saying, we'll give you everything you want at a place that has historically produced national championships, no matter who the coach is, it's hard to turn that down. It's a shitty situation that he created, and that's on him. But like, Mike, if somebody offered you $50 million, not even $100, $50 million to say, you want to go talk about the Big Ten? Like,
here's the difference. Ole Miss was giving him the same money, roughly.
How many national championships does Ole Miss have?
We'll see. As you already changed you've already pivoted to the money. No, like, you went from money to national championships.
He said money wasn't an issue. So national championships and being able to win one is the biggest issue. I think that ceiling in Oxford is lower. I think he has raised the ceiling as high as it can go in Oxford. And like,
well, that's fine to say, but in a month's time, he could be a national champion in Oxford. Can he accomplish that in LSU?
Yeah.
In a month?
Year, no.
No. So yeah. I don't buy that either. Now I do buy LSU's a better program and track record and Heisman's, and that's what he said was important to him. So I don't know. I just don't buy it. I don't buy any of that. And I know for a fact he was lying about, well, I just found out on Saturday or Sunday, whatever it was,
that I can't
coach his team. That's a bold faced lie. It's also a lie that he said, well, the players want me to coach. They said, get the fuck out of here. They were not behind him at that point in time. So again, I don't know. There's a lot of lies there.
I think that I posted this on, I think it was Friday on Twitter, and I was being serious for once. And it was like, you know, somebody like him who has struggled with like addiction, constant narcissism, and like having those two things get in his own way. I thought it was surprising that he found himself in Oxford and then chose to leave that place. Like if anyone that faces those types of things where it's like issues with addiction, especially in like places like, when you find sobriety and you find it in a place that like you can kind of be comfortable in, it's like a safe place. It's a home that you probably had a very hard time struggling to find. I mean, dude, this guy's lived all over. He brought up yesterday. His dad moved 17 times when he was little. He's been in Knoxville. He's been in LA. He's been in Tuscaloosa. He's been like, you think about the times when he was in Tuscaloosa going out with his coach's gear on, using a different name because everything was a joke to him. And it's like, he's moved all over. There's probably demons and skeletons in the closet everywhere. But he really did find himself in Oxford, and there's something to be said about, there's all these things that you can be promised and win at LSU, which I fully believe he will do, versus, I don't know, man, like this is where my life finally changed for the better, and leaving that is a very difficult decision. And to be quite frank, as much as I understand going to LSU and I can't fucking wait to cover him here, it was been a very difficult decision to overcome all those things in Oxford and then leave Oxford.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, let me ask you this, because this is kind of the conversations now that we've been having. Where is LSU with Lane Kiffin in the pecking order in terms of the elite of the elite in the SEC? I would assume you still got Kirby and Georgia ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
But is anyone else? I mean, is Sark in Texas, Elko A&M? Are there any that are DeBoer at Alabama? Are any of the others clear ahead of LSU, or are they kind of all right there? Maybe it is as a tier two.
Golish at Auburn. I can't wait to talk about that. I loved his presser. I know the one, I always forget her name, but the Auburn fan in the comments that we see every week. She's like
Emily.
Yeah. I love that hire. Love that hire. I don't think Brian Kelly was bloated. I think he got on Ozempic. He lost a bunch of weight. I think so. In the pecking order of the SEC, I will always have Kirby first until he retires. Like, just point blank, period. Unless they fall off a cliff, he will always be my number one. Shout out to Curbs. But, like, I think Sark and Texas can have bigger they'll have more money. They can have probably better rosters and things like that. I just have watched Kiffin over the past couple of years, and he's kind of, like, tracked down a goal for himself every year and then poured himself into all of his coaching to make sure he can achieve those goals. And what I mean by that is, like, remember that 52-17 loss to Georgia in Athens? God, that was fucking awkward. Just out in the Serengeti out there, and just awful. The horrible loss they had to Georgia in Athens a couple years ago. And he then shifts to next year where they're, you know, I think they had one loss, I think, at the time, or maybe it was two losses at the time. Backs against the wall, and they have to go beat Georgia to stay in the playoff, and they beat them, and they kind of beat the shit out of them. And he said, like, since last year, we have been pouring ourselves into figuring out how to beat them. And then they did. And I know that they end up losing to Florida inexplicably a couple weeks later, but you saw him do that. Then you saw him go win 11 games this year. And it feels like he has turned a corner as a coach in terms of, I know what I can do, what I'm capable of. If I can put my mind to this, have, like, focus on the right things, like specifically for some opponents, whether it's Georgia. I mean, Mike, we're talking about, he's two possessions short and a fucking Pete Golding defense. Like, everyone talking about how great Golding is. The shit that he pulled in Athens is why they're not 12-0. Like, I mean, five straight touchdown drives to start the game, which had never happened against Kirby Smart. He's two drives away in that game from being 12-0. So I think that when you look at how good of a coach Kirby is, I will never put anybody above him. I think the combination of LSU's resources and Lane Kiffin, I would have him at two. The longest answer I've ever given on the show. ever.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's why he's down there. So to win it all, now the pressure's on to get it done. Aside from Kiffin, you already hit on Golish. Is there another hire that you like, particularly maybe second most in the SEC? John Summerall, Florida, Golish, Auburn, Silverfield, Arkansas, or now we got Will Stein at Kentucky and Pete Golding. You got too much Bama, and you're already throwing him under the bus.
But I thought he was a great defensive coordinator. I'm just also pointing out the flaws and all the stuff that people are saying. Like, he's the best. The only reason they were even good is because of that. And you're like, all right, cool. I need to post something. I need you to carry the show for a second. I will tell you real quick. I think that the hire of Golish, I think Summerall is probably a better coach so far. I'm basing it off the fact that he's been to four straight conference championships in his first 4 years as a head coach. I love all of his numbers. I think my favorite thing about Summerall, and this is like when I first moved to Louisiana, when they asked, they're playing Northwestern at home, and they asked, hey, listen, it's the anniversary of Katrina, which is something you just don't fucking joke around about, like, down here. And anniversary of Katrina, can we wear the same uniforms we wore then? They were white uniforms on the road 20 years later for the same date and commemorating. And Northwestern was like, no. I was like, well, first off, like, shocked that would have ever been the answer. Like that, I just, what do you have to gain out of that? And like, no, absolutely. No. We're definitely wearing our icy whites on the road. Everyone knows Northwestern loves our road uniforms. Like, what? And so I thought that was wild, but his comment about it, he's like, don't mess with New Orleans or like whatever the exact phrase was. I thought that was great. I just loved what Golish had to say in his presser and specifically to his team, because I think for Auburn fans, you got to be so fucking tired. I would assume, because I know that they're very culty down there where it's like, I thought he was a perfect fit of like, you know, God willing, God dang, we're going to try to go out there and coach them boys up. And, you know, God willing, we're going to go out there and win the football game. And it's about coaching these young men and build a relationship, like all that shit. Mm-hmm. Go win fucking football games, dude. Like, South Florida was 4-20, I think, in their previous 4-20-something, like in their previous 3 years before Golish got there. And he had three straight bowl games, a 9-win season this year. I loved what he had to say. He runs an offense, as you saw at Tennessee, where he is going to be a thorn in the people and a lot of people's side, especially D coordinators, with how difficult the matchups he makes.
Yeah, no doubt. And I want to shout out Army here. Goading sucks. Horrible mistake. He also said, Bama, you know, we ran him out for a reason. He's horrible. I love these Bama fans that say that. And then what they don't add to that is who did, I believe Saban pivoted to Kevin Steele, who still, he had a good reputation, but he did such a great job. They literally stripped the play calling from him mid-season. And then they got the current guy, Womack. Now, again, he's turned out to be solid, but they were so shitty last year that it cost them a chance to go to the college football playoffs. So, had they had Pete Golding, I think they would have been significantly better. But he's so horrible that he has been a catalyst for Ole Miss to turn the corner and arguably surpass Alabama.
Great recruiter. He's going to fit in well with that culture there. He's Southern. What I love about Pete more than anything is he doesn't fucking care about your perception of him. He's just all ball. I remember seeing an interview he did when he was at Bama, and he was like turned around, like pulling out these like books of like their game prep, and the binders were like 3-inch binders. They were like the same. It was like a little bit thicker and longer than Brodo Baggins' dick. It was like 3 inches, right? So, just kidding, Brodo, love you. So Pete Golding came in there and he was like, I think he was under Tim for like 5 years. Now, from what I was told around the program, like when he said he had an offer from Ole Miss, he was like, that's fine. You can take it. I think they had kind of run their course there. Right. There's some questionable things he did, but I'm kind of with you on this, man. The whole idea of some of the stuff that Bama fans have like brought up with him and Bill O'Brien, especially, they were like, they're fucking terrible. And it's like, you were top 10 in offense both years under Bill O'Brien. It was like, he's the worst offensive coordinator ever. And you're like, I think it's a revisionist history. I think that he will be, I think Golding will be really interesting to see there. I was shocked that he was announced the coach though.
Are you surprised at all how much blowback there's been from Florida fans that John Summerall is their coach, given essentially universal praise for John Summerall? And that, we know that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I think Billy Napier to was probably what they'd come back and say. He had universal praise, and many, many SEC programs wanted Billy Napier, but he held out for Florida. But are you surprised at all that, you know, how much blowback John Summerall's getting?
Well, you know, it's a fan base, Mike, that sat there for fucking 4 weeks telling everybody that would listen, like, no, he's coming to us. It's like, no, he's not. Like, yeah, he is. Like, no, he's not. I can tell you, like, and then you find out I just can't believe Kiffin didn't come here after talking to our dumbass fucking AD. A lot of efforts today. I'll try to tone it down. But like, yeah, Scott Strickland's a terrible AD. Everyone knows that. And if he would have went with Florida fans, they're very frustrated that they not at Summerall, but they're frustrated they lost out on the Kiffin sweepstakes for sure. And then it's also this like kind of weird, it's not like a black eye, it's like an ego, or damage to your pride a little bit, because it's like, well, hold on. Not only did he not pick us, but then he picked one of our rivals, or he probably would have stayed at Ole Miss. Like we were the bronze medalists in this. And then you have this whole thing where it's like, okay, Summerall's coming from where? Tulane? Where's Tulane? Oh, Louisiana? Fuck. It's a G6 school from Louisiana. He has almost a similar record. I think that assessment is about as dumb and low-hanging fruit as when Auburn fans were like, oh, Kalen DeBoer is Husky Harsin. And you're like, no, he just played in a national championship. And they're like, he's Husky Harsin. He's not going to learn how to recruit down here. And he's like, he will absolutely be able to do this. And like, so I think that if I'm a Florida fan, I'm trying to practice a little bit of logic and reason and say, this is a hire that everyone wanted. And before Lane came in, he was the name really ahead of James Franklin, I believe, ahead of Drinkwitz, ahead of some of these other guys that it seemed like everybody was in on. And to land him, sure, it wasn't your first choice, but it's still a really, really good, really good pickup.
Yeah, and according to reports, I don't know if you've seen this yet, Marler, but looks like he's already acquired Brad White, the defensive coordinator from Kentucky, who I think he was arguably Mark Stoops' best coordinator maybe ever. You know, you could maybe you could argue Liam Cohen, but Brad White did a hell of a job with Kentucky's defense. Now he's going to have better athletes to work with at Florida. So staff coming together quickly there at Florida, and I think that's a hell of a first hire right there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, it's interesting. Like, I love what he said about not hiring his friends. There's been a couple of comments that were made. Honestly, man, I thought Kiffin was going to drop a me and my family comment today.
Is he going to do the dancing, you think? Yes. He better, right? He's got to do it.
He's got to. I thought that it was a – hold on. You got to bear with me here because I LSU just got a commit flip from Ole Miss, and I need to post it.
Okay, go ahead. Mark Swanson, yeah, appreciate you. Get out of here, Marler. I hate you. Florida wanted Lane, got two Lane, got laned here. That's just harsh. Hey, how about this? So I'm going to talk more with Marler here when he gets back and he stops being lazy and doing two things at once. But how about this little graphic I worked up here for the SEC championship? We'll dive more into this when he gets back. But I'm kind of stunned to see where Alabama is in terms of Georgia, because I consider this game a true toss-up here. But Bama better than Georgia. Take it for what it's worth. Scoring offense, defense, pass efficiency, pass defense efficiency. Georgia's better in run offense and run defense efficiency. But Bama better in third down offense, defense, explosive plays on offense, and explosive plays defense edge to Georgia. So Georgia's got three footballs. Bama's got seven. So again, this is not the end all be all, but a little surprising because I have this more of a 50-50 type game, and I'm leaning one way or another. I think I'm at the point of the season where I think I know everything there is to know about these teams, essentially, where when I make a prediction, I don't have to sit here and ponder it too much. But 11-1 Georgia, 10-2 Bama. Matchup in Atlanta. Can't wait for it. Can't wait. Hopefully to meet some of the cousins down in Atlanta. I think we're going to be hanging out. We probably won't even go to the game. We got denied credentials once again. Number one SEC podcast out there. But no need to give us credentials to the event. So Shane and I don't know if we don't have tickets to the game, but we will be down there. I think what we'll do is head to a bar nearby. So we're going to be tailgating all Saturday, so that should be fun. And we'll be around Friday as well. You done, you lazy bastard?
No, I'm almost done. Hold on.
Okay. So we'll be down there drinking. Come hang out. I think the place Shane was talking about last year was, I think it's called Stats in Atlanta. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, Stats Brew and Pub. We'll probably go back there. They were giving out free beer. I have no idea if they're going to do that again, but pretty cool. What else we got here? What else? Commit watch here. You down there? Thumbs up?
Yeah, I'm posting right now.
Is he a 5-star?
No, it's a 4-star tight end. J.C. Anderson flips from Ole Miss to LSU.
So now he's raiding the recruits?
I mean, that was always going to happen for sure. So Stats is a great bar. Somebody that lived in Atlanta, Stats is a great bar. More here. I think there's a lot of stuff down there. I don't know why you haven't been credentialed yet. That is pretty stupid. That would piss me off. But, I'm so bummed that LSU is not involved in some capacity in this year's SEC championship game, because like, even if I didn't go to the game, like being in it, like living in Atlanta, like fanfare is always awesome. I saw you guys there, I think last year. It was a blast. That's what I told you guys to come to that bar. We got real banged up at that bar in the Omni where we met for media days, because they had like just some band playing like 90s country and 90s rock. It was awesome. It was a great night. But I think Stats is also a great bar. You'll have a blast there, man.
Hey, can you give us any of the behind the scenes? Were you hanging out with all the cool people? Like I saw Alyssa Lang, they were drinkings, and
had dinner with Alyssa yesterday at Superior Grill down here in Baton Rouge. It was a lot of fun. Nothing crazy to report. I think it's like everyone in this, like including fans really, is kind of just like thank fucking God he finally committed somewhere. Because it's like, I think everybody was probably, and let us know in the chat, I'm assuming you guys felt the same way, because every single person I've heard has been like, I'm just fucking glad he chose somewhere, because I was tired of hearing about it.
Any chance DeBoering goes to Penn State?
No. Somebody said, Marlo, look at your own trash fan base before you talk about anyone else. Yours is the worst in the country. I assuming you're talking about Alabama. They are the worst in the country. Watch this, Driftwood. You're right. Feelings aren't hurt. That's an objective statement. But like we're comparing, like the bar is set pretty low, brother.
I was thinking, you know, which fan base? I mean, that when he says your fan base, he could be talking about seven or eight there. So I wasn't quite sure.
I told you this last year. I remember being in Atlanta, and I'm sitting there. At the time, I was doing the Locked – or not Locked. I was doing Locked On Gamecocks. I was doing my own SEC stuff with LouisianaSports.net, and then I was doing a show for Bama called Cover Crimson with Clint Lamb. And I remember this guy coming sitting down at the bar next to me, Mike. And he's like, it's just me and Allie. And he comes over, and I can just tell from years of doing this and also doing stand-up where it's like, when someone is frustrated with you and you could visibly see it on their face, you're like, oh, this is bad. Like, is this person going to say hi or punch me in the face? And this guy was like visibly upset, and we sit there for like an hour, and finally about an hour, I guess he got enough confidence and walked up, and he goes, is you Chris Marler? And I was like, yeah, man. How are you? He's like, fuck you, dude. There's no reason that Alabama and Cover Crimson allow some South Carolina homer to ever talk on this game. And I was like, okay, I don't know what you're going to do.
JP says, Baller's the best Tiger Cock Tide fan out there. How about your Gamecocks? I've not heard you weigh in on this at all. I even texted you and you blocked me. Blues into Clemson, 28-14. Is that pick six was just damn brutal. I put my faith in the Cock one last time and they let me down. You know what?
I'm just so glad it's over. I'm just so glad it's over. There's so much red on that screen, dude. I mean, they lost eight of their last 10 games, only wins against Coastal and Kentucky. It's just so many things that happened during the season where it's like you could have beaten Bama. You're up by eight on Bama with like a couple minutes to go and you lose by seven. You are up by 27 on A&M and have this historic collapse. And it's like, I don't even know why I thought they were going to beat Clemson. I definitely love you too, Steve Johnson. Also, Brodo, I just want to be very clear. I was kidding with you earlier. I love you too. But yeah, I mean, and also, yes, Driftwood, LSU fans are tough sometimes too. But it just, I don't even know why I thought they were going to win, Mike. I don't even know what committed or what made me commit to being like, yeah, they got a chance. It's just like, they gave up five sacks. I guess this is the 5 minutes where I'm allowed to cuss since I can't do it Locked On. Yeah. They got 5 6. They had fucking 43 sacks allowed all year. It was just ineptitude at every fucking turn, nonstop. And now the fun part begins, because it's like, you got to figure out what you're going to do at OC. You have to figure out what you're doing tomorrow for signing day, because it waits for no one. And then you got to figure out the portal. And there's just no part of me, man, if I'm being honest, like I haven't talked to anybody on the staff about this yet. I'm sure I will in the next couple of weeks, of just from a roster management standpoint of like where they are going, like where they're headed, what they're searching for in the portal. I think a lot of it's pretty obvious, but also like, I don't know what the, like anything on the inside yet. Right. But I will tell you just from my own personal assumption and speculation, mainly assumption, there's no fucking way Lenore Sellers is returning. I hope he does. I would love to see him play again for South Carolina. Like, I think he's one of the most physically, uniquely talented players in this league. He had a horrible season. He had a horrible play caller for most of the year. And I just wonder what this is going to look like from an Exodus standpoint, because how do you convince that kid to stay another year, which he needs to in general, not go pro? How do you convince him to stay another year when you have no track record of ever not only developing quarterbacks, but also ever hiring the right guy at OC? So why do we believe Beamer's going to all of a sudden do that? And I hope he does. But like, then Dylan Stewart, like you got to see if he's going to stay. Dakari Swain, these are all three guys that are massive potential guys you need to keep home. And you were able to do last year, but now the roles are kind of reversed. Instead of being 9-3 going into the postseason and already inking those deals, you're 4-8. There's so much instability. Clayton White might leave to go to Coastal Carolina. We don't know about that. Like, And that's something he really hasn't had to face yet, which is like roster and coaching turnover, where you've lost key parts, because they've always done a good job of bringing people in. I'm just fucking dejected, dude. It was a tough watch this year.
And I have no clue. I don't really follow the draft stuff, but if they tell him he's a first rounder, which he's probably not, but based on performance this year, but if he's first rounder, I mean, he's got to go, don't you think?
1,000%. Here's the thing too, Mike. You and I have eyes. I have four, bitch. Two more than you. But like, I was kidding. Just give it a second. But like watching Sellers this year, it's very clear he's got some issues and there's stuff he needs to work through and blah, blah, blah. And I don't think he's ready to go to the NFL. I just don't think he's there yet. I also know after watching the NFL draft for years and years and years, and the combine specifically, if this man goes and spends the next 8 to 10 weeks with the best pre-draft training people in America, and somebody said Beamer wasn't fired. Steve, fucking, dude, it's like that's like the epitome of where this program is right now. Like, wait, hold on, what? But I think if he spends the next 8 to 10 weeks getting ready for the draft and then and like training at some, I don't know if you've ever been to any of those type of facilities. I know I used to have to do some of it for baseball, and it's like the amount of focus that goes into just getting physically ready to run the 40, jump, lift, all that shit. He's going to show up at the Underwear Olympics looking like a fucking Greek god. He will throw the ball 70 yards in the air. He will run a 4.4 flat. And, you know, I like somebody is dumb enough to take a chance on him is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I certainly think that could be the case. But I also think it's a case, Chris, that if anybody is looking for one hell of a holiday gift idea, they need to go to ridge.com/SEC. We got all kinds of deals going on right here, brother. And I know you need yourself a Ridge to get ridged up. Here, I'm going to ridge you up with one of these, Chris, this holiday season. Yeah, you could do that too. I don't recommend that necessarily, but ridge.com/SEC, promo code SEC over at Ridge, gets you hooked up today. You will not be disappointed. They sent us, Shane over one, me, and then we liked it so much we asked for Steven to get one, and they sent him one on over. So go help the show. This holiday season, go check them out, ridge.com/SEC. They got deals going on. Cyber Monday was just yesterday, of course. They had deals up to 47% off. So go check them out. Really helps us out and helps the show stay free. That's all we're trying to do over here. You know what, Chris?
That's right, brother. That's right. Those are really cool. I've been doing some research into two of your sponsors, Poncho. Seems like you guys got in on Poncho way early in the game because they are now everywhere. Thank you, Jake Smith, for that. And the Ridge thing is awesome as well. So there you go.
You could put a dime in there, he said.
Nice.
Hey, speaking of dime, will Bama beat Georgia for the seemingly 10th time in a row, you think, this weekend?
I know my role when it comes to talking about this game. I mean, how could they, Mike? I mean, how could Alabama go and beat Kirby Smart versus Kalen DeBoer? Can you imagine the blowout that's going to happen? Like, there's no way. Saban's gone. It's not like the refs are going to help him anymore. I mean, I don't see how on earth Alabama could ever have a chance at beating Georgia. It just doesn't – I mean, you know, there's just no way. There's no chance Alabama can go in there against Kirby Smart and Gunnar Stockton – and all those fans bark at – let me tell you something, Mike. There are fucking Georgia fans right now making AI videos of Alabama players talking shit about Georgia and then posting it saying, this is bulletin board material. AI. They're not even removing the Sora logo off the video. They're just like, this is crazy. Somebody get this to Kirby. And here's the thing. Those fans are fucking dumb enough to believe it because they did it a couple years ago when it was like – yeah, man, everyone thought we were going 7-5. Like, everyone thought we were going 7-5. We're like, you won the national title the year before, you dumb fucking morons. Like, no one thought that at all. I think that they are, like, it's hard to beat a team twice in one season. if we're being honest, if Georgia kicks the field goal earlier this year, they probably win that game. Or if they don't put in a fucking white running back on 4th-and-1, they probably win that game. I hate this game so much. I just keep waiting for Georgia to finally kick the door in and beat them. And that is, at some point, maybe that'll happen. But I tell you, the more important part of this, Mike, is the idea that if they lose, that they're not going to make the playoff. And I want, this is twofold here. Okay. The idea that if they're going to lose, they won't make the playoff is fucking absurd. A side note to that is every single person that is talking about this, thank you. Like, thank you for saying, yeah. And so Bama loses to Georgia, which of course they will. They're an underdog again. There's no chance they had to make the playoff. Like that is absurd. It is. And it's also time we just be very honest and just admit that we just talk about Alabama differently than everyone else. Like, how come that Florida? There was CFB Kings on Twitter today posted some shit that was like, Bama's been awful over the last month. They only scored 20 points on LSU. And you're like, LSU is a top 15 defense nationally. Like, what the fuck are we talking about? Like, and it was like this, like since October 11th. And it was like, that's the day after they had won their fourth straight game against a ranked opponent, which had never happened in SEC history. This is a team that I think is not trending in the opposite direction as Georgia necessarily, like dramatically. But Ty Simpson has regressed a little bit. I think Georgia has started to play better. But it's also not like Georgia went into that game against a bad Georgia Tech defense and were able to light up the scoreboard or look like, you know, Gunnar Stockton was kind of being talked about in some circles about getting to New York. Guy had like 70 yards. I think this is going to be a great game. I have a very hard time thinking Bama's going to beat them for the second time in 1 year. But if they do...
Big game to boring, man. The guy's elite in these matchups. You know what?
I cannot wait. Listen, every single fucking Georgia fan that when this game happens, do not sit here and start this, we got him in the game that matters. No, they all matter. They all matter. and you know that. Otherwise, you guys wouldn't be taking fucking screenshots of phantom holding penalties and putting them all over the internet every time you guys lose to them, which by my count, Mike, I think is 10 times in the last 11 games. Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite a few, but I do love the fact that you're rationalizing ahead of time. If Alabama loses, how important all the other ones were.
They are. They're like, no. Cause every single time it's like, hey, yeah, like Georgia fans do this every single game. It's like there's somebody on Twitter, especially on Twitter, which is like not real life. But there was somebody that was like, look at me and Oklahoma fans coming to a common ground here. There was somebody that was like Dog Muse or something like that. And I think it's just like a Georgia fan account. And he's like, I'm done talking trash. I'm going to let my Georgia's pads do the talking on Saturday. It's like, yeah, man, that was always going to happen. Like, you're not playing the game. And it's very weird to me how serious Georgia fans take, like, the relationship they think they have with the team. It's not like that with every team. And I think
right, but here's where you're wrong.
Oh boy.
What if that was Kirby's burner?
Yeah, maybe, dude. I don't think Kirby has enough time to be doing all that stuff. It would be hilarious if he was. But I do think that there's a part of Georgia fans and some people, especially on social media, that are like, dude, Kirby's going to fucking see this, and it's going to be so fucking sick, dude. It's just, I mean, did you see what I posted the other day? It was so, like, it was pretty thick. It was a Kirby part. It was like a pump-up speech that I stole from someone else on the internet, and he was like saying, like, we're going to freaking beat the frick out of this team, dude. And I was like, yeah, Kirby, that's my coach. Shut the fuck up.
Hey, well, speaking of disappointing memories in Georgia, thoughts on, and now it's, I guess it's not official, but Jared Curtis, 5-star quarterback. He's committed twice to Georgia now. Signing day is literally tomorrow. He has allegedly flipped his commitment to Vanderbilt, and now he has come out publicly and said this is not true. So we'll see. But if it holds, what's your thoughts on Vanderbilt getting a 5-star quarterback number one quarterback prospect in the country that was committed to Georgia.
I think it's awesome. Like, and let me also say this too, as much shit as I give Georgia fans just now, y'all don't need a five-star quarterback to win national championships. You're arguably better when you don't have one. Like, you know, we all remember the Stetson Bennett versus what's his name? Stash money millionaire.
Was JT Daniels.
Wyatt Earp or whatever his name was. that is like, it's a blow to him because they didn't have a backup plan. I don't think in the class yet. They'll find someone. But I think it's pretty great, man. I think it's one of those things where we thought Vandy was a one-hit wonder. They come back and then the following year and win 10 games, the most in program history. Then we also thought, well, you know, when Pavia leaves, it'll be worse. And you're like, okay, what is going on now? And I think Charlie Weiss might have just signed.
In for the playoff.
But like Vandy comes back and like wins 10 games this year and it's like, well, when Pavia leaves, they're not gonna be as good. And it's like, okay, now you're shoring up a five-star QB, which don't always pan out, right? He's gonna have some growing pains, especially in a 9-game conference schedule. We saw how Dylan Raiola was when he went to Nebraska. But this is also now the second time in the last 3 years you've swung and missed on a five-star, like number one type ranked quarterback in the country. And they've gone to lesser schools. And there's reasons why. And I don't think the sky is falling for Georgia. But I think that specifically looking at this from a Vanderbilt standpoint, this is the whole thing that we wanted to see from NIL. Like this is the stuff where it's like, hey, this is going to even the playing field. And we you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago when we were watching Zootopia 2 highlights in your basement. And that was when, like, Duke offering the kid Mensa for, like, $4 million a year to go to Duke from Tulane. This is going to be a massive package just like you. And it'll be, like, for an NIL standpoint, they're going to spend a ton of money into what is going on right now? What is this?
This is the official announcement from Ole Miss that they got their staff. Joe Judge, Charlie Weiss, all the whole gang is here for the playoff run. And Lane Kiffin has announced he wanted this to be known before the playoff committee releases their rankings that they're going to have their staff.
That's good.
Aside from him, obviously.
I cannot believe LSU's allowing Charlie Weiss Jr. to call this game going to the playoffs, dude. This is so fucked.
Well, what happened was he got that provision in his contract. If Ole Miss wins it all, LSU's going to pay his ass a bonus. So he said, you know what? Send the staff back to Oxford.
Wild. Wild. That just shows you, one, Jimmy Sexton's a monster. Two, every single thing that they were – like there was never going to be a stone they left uncovered or be in a situation where they're like, well, I mean, like – Any sort of bargaining chip that he could have thrown at their face, be like, I don't know, what about this? They're like, fine, fuck it, we'll just do it. Like, just whatever we have to do to make this to make this work.
And it also, I think we already knew this if you had a brain, but that governor down there, just a complete idiot.
Yeah.
Politics aside, I don't know anything about his I don't care, but to come out here and we're gonna revolutionize coaching contracts. And we're not doing this. It's going to be incentive based. And I said, good luck, buddy. And then here we got Lane Kiffin got a bigger contract with no offsets. Is my understanding.
No offsets. But here's the thing too. This is like from the outside looking in, the whole thing was a fucking circus. And I fully get it. I've never lived in a place where it's like, yeah, you know, the governor is out here just openly talking about how what the plan is. Like, he's not involved. Like, I get how stupid it all looks, and it does look stupid, so that's a fair response. But the governor was never going to be involved in this decision, just like the taxpayers were never going to be stuck with the bill of paying for Brian Kelly's buyout. That was, like, one of the main reasons they decided they were going to move on from him is because – they had one donor. I don't even think it's Todd Graves. I think it's they had one donor that was like, yeah, I'll donate this. Like I will cover this entire payout for Brian Kelly. So I get how the optics of it look bad, but yeah, some of that stuff was never gonna happen. I think it's I don't know, man. It's a weird time now where it's like he's the $1 million if Ole Miss wins is it feels unnecessary. Like, it feels completely unnecessary. But yeah, also I do want to point out one thing. Chicken 1515 says Marler was raised in a brothel. Marler is a cock, doesn't know football. Here's one thing I do know. You've spelled my name three different fucking ways in three different posts. Figure it out. It's not very hard. Guess a different vowel, brother. Just guess a different. You're almost there. It's not a Y, so don't use that one next.
Hey, what do you think? You've had a lot of viral Texas takes. Thoughts on Texas, 9-3. Sarkisian says he may cancel the Ohio State game next year. I don't know that he has the authority or power to do that, but he's out here claiming it. Does Texas at 9-3, do they deserve a shot to get in the playoff?
No. Like, just,
but they
just
beat three, like, top 10 teams.
That's incredible. But also, where the cut line is this year, they don't deserve it. Just like last year, Bama didn't deserve to get in. Ole Miss and South Carolina, maybe. I don't know. Like Bama had three losses last year, and they had a win over Georgia, who was the SEC champ. And you can look at that and say, well, they beat the SEC champ to get in there. But it's like, well, they also lost to 6-6 Oklahoma and 6-6 Vandy. Like, those are – I don't know which data point that they want to go off of, but there's just not, like – You're not out because you lost to fucking Ohio State. Like, you just don't get rewarded for losses like the committee has always done. Like, that part is like, you're rarely rewarded. Well, except for fucking Notre Dame every single year. It's awesome that you beat Oklahoma when they were basically without Mateer. But Mike, keep this up. I'm looking at the middle graphics here, and it's like Texas is just doing this whole weird thing where it's like there's just zero self-awareness once again, which seems to be a theme with these people, where it's like, oh, well, we beat so-and-so and so-and-so. And it's like, you also lost to 4-8 Florida. You barely beat Kentucky on the road, who just fired their coach. You barely beat Mississippi State. You were down by 17 in the fourth quarter against them. Like, it's awesome that you beat A&M. But also, by the way, you lost to Georgia by 25 points. Like, what part of you thinks that you're a playoff? Oh, well, we're 9-3. We have these three top 10 wins. Cool. You skated by Kentucky, you skated by Mississippi State, and frankly, you got very fucking lucky in both those games. You beat Vandy, you got to play Oklahoma with a injured quarterback, you beat Arkansas, who's the worst team in the conference, you got your ass beat on the road at Georgia. By the way, all three of those losses away from home. Where do you think the fucking playoff's going to be, brother? You're not playing in Austin. Like, it's so stupid. Like, it's just like, I get why he's saying it, because you have to go to bat for your team, but it's just like, I hate it when Saban did it in 2022 when he was like, well, where would Vegas have, you know, like, the line? It's like, shut the – what are we talking about? Like, it's so stupid, man. It's just so stupid.
Now, what about Vanderbilt? Could you make the case for Vanderbilt at 10-2?
I would, but also if we're going to have – like, this is a tough one, man, because I've said on this show before, it's like, man, they get to 10-2, they're not going to be able to keep them out. I thought that if they were at 10-2, that would also include – other conferences having losses. And right now you're going to have at least three from the Big Ten. I think probably only three. There's a very strong case to be made for BYU. I think Miami's definitely out, and they should not be rewarded for sitting at home on championship weekend in the ACC they couldn't even make. I think 10-2 is a great record, and like, they should be talked about much more than we were talking about Texas. Mike, if I'm being honest, I don't know what their great win is. I mean,
South Carolina was top 10.
That's very true. God damn it.
I mean, that's a top 10 win. LSU, that was a healthy LSU. Tennessee, I mean, Tennessee at Tennessee, whoop that ass.
Fair. I it feels like to me that Vandy is going to get
and what if they're like Vandy, this probably shouldn't factor in, but I think it should now. No, let me contradict myself. If their damn quarterback wins the Heisman,
yeah,
that should be a tiebreaker. I mean, Heisman winner on a 10-win team, that should be a playoff resume.
I mean, Travis Hunter didn't win the Heisman last year, and they were like, what, 9-3?
Yeah, see, they didn't get that 10 win.
I agree with you, man. I think that is and he's the favorite right now to win it. So it's like, I get that point. I think that's a fair point.
How about this fair point? Is Oklahoma, can they do any damage in the playoff given their offense is suboptimal?
You know, the defense will travel anywhere. I've said this over and over and over again. It's awesome to see this team and how good they can be without elite quarterback play. Like, usually that is not the case. I think that Michigan win looks better than ever. You know, they lost at home to Ole Miss, which was tough, obviously. But going on the road at Tennessee, going on the road at Bama, it's a great resume. I think with Mateer, he has as high of a ceiling as anyone in the country from a skill set standpoint. But I mean, I said this to you last week, man. Like, this is one of the best teams in the country when they don't turn the football over. They're one of the best teams in the country when they don't turn the football over. But when they do, they're awful. Like they're not a good team. They're not awful. They're just not a good team. Like, right. And last week having three interceptions, you had three interceptions and you were playing against a backup quarterback who had like 8 yards passing with like however many completions. It was crazy to me just how bad they could look. I thought they were going to blow that, which would have been really, really tough for them. But Mateer, if he's on, can be really good. I think we're so far removed, Mike, from like when he's been good.
Yeah, and we haven't talked at all A&M Texas. Are you selling any stock in A&M after a rough outing on the road at Texas?
I mean, I wasn't buying any really to start with. They're a good team. They went 11-0 to start the year in a really good conference. They had a great win at Notre Dame. Here's the deal. Add up the record of the teams they played in the SEC. The teams they beat, because I think that's more important. We talk a lot about how, like, well, they played a record against, you know, like their opponent's winning percentage of the year is this, right? Like, that's something that's being made in the case for Notre Dame a bunch right now. Well, if you take out the two losses that Notre Dame had, that number of like six, like, you know, winning percentage of like 591 or whatever drops significantly to under 500 because the 10 wins they had weren't against the same type of competition. I think A&M is a good football team. I think that the receivers are great. They got a lot of skill, like, players. Cassius Howell was fucking awesome. But here's the deal, man. If you're going into the postseason, I know I want my team to know who they are when they are punched in the mouth, because you are going to get punched in the mouth in the postseason. It happens every year. And at least then you know who the fuck you are when you get in those moments in big games when you're trying to extend your season or go win a fucking title. They don't know who they are because they haven't beaten anybody worth a shit since that Notre Dame game. I mean, it's a 12-44 is the record for the teams they have beaten in the SEC. That's the combined SEC record for those teams. They didn't beat anybody over 500. I think they only had one win against a team that was 500. That was Mizzou. And that was with a backup quarterback, like a banged up quarterback. At least did Prabula come back for that?
No, he did not.
Okay. So like, I look at that game and I'm like, man, this is a team that's faced four or five teams this year with fired coaches. They haven't played anybody in the SEC with a winning record in conference play besides Texas, and they lost to them by 10. Like, they deserve to be in the playoff. I think they have a lot of talent on that team. I do not think Texas A&M is as good as any of the other contenders in this league. I think that they have – Of the five teams in the SEC that will make the playoff, I think they're the worst ones. And I honestly, as somebody that would be pulling for Bama, I was hoping Bama would get A&M over anybody, because A&M, they would have beaten A&M.
Well, that's interesting, because that was going to lead into my final question for you here. But how important will the seeding be once we do know the final bracket, just with all these SEC teams potentially in there? How important could that be to determining the eventual champion here?
I mean, I think the seeding's important. Like the Bama thing is like, it sucks that they are like, well, if you don't win the SEC title in the toughest conference there is and beat Georgia twice, you're going to drop to 10. You got to go to fucking Oregon. And I think that would also line up with then they would play Indiana after that, which is a tough, tough draw. I'm very interested to see what they do with Lane and Ole Miss. I am pulling for Ole Miss this postseason, because I think it's still a travesty that they wouldn't have gotten in at 11-1. Like, there's no way you take them out. Like, they're one quarter of football away from being 12-0. But yeah, I mean, I think the seeding is going to matter. I hope that Ole Miss still gets to host, because they have been in the top part of contention for that for all year. So I look at some of these and like, I think, like, do we know who Texas Tech is? Because they haven't played the toughest schedule, but they all the numbers point that they're really good. What are the matchups going to look like? Like, I think what would be great for the SEC is if they could figure out a way to, if whether it's Bama or Georgia, if you can get at least one bye in that mix, because there's also rumors too, Mike, that if Bama wins the SEC, they're not going to get a bye, which that would be, I'll just say it, fucking bullshit. Like, that is like, if you win the SEC and they're 11-2, they don't get a bye with that schedule. Mm-hmm. That's insane. So I don't know. I don't even know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, I do think they will get a bye, but I see why you would suggest they may not. You know, it's going to be close to jump from right now 10 to, I guess it'd be 4. That'd be tight. Speaking of tight, apologies for me not knowing this, but do you travel on the road for LSU games?
Or I do not.
Will you possibly next year?
I will be at that Ole Miss game, yes.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go. I know. Well, can you set the stage for us on how you think that will play out?
I don't know what LSU – it's impossible to look and see what LSU is going to look like because of – and Ole Miss too, and really any team when you have like the portal about to open.
Right.
I have a hard time believing, like how bad was this team this year, Mike?
At LSU?
Yeah.
Basically unwatchable, aside from their defense.
Yes. And you look at, like, I know they had all the frustrations and issues on the offensive line and the quarterback play was bad. How much better do you think this team would have been if Ole Miss was coaching the offense? Because I don't think they lose to Ole Miss. I don't think they lose to Vandy. I don't think they lose to Oklahoma, especially with the way Oklahoma played. Mm-hmm. I think it's a much different team. And I say that to say the talent that's going to be brought into LSU this year, he brought it up yesterday. He's like, I mean, the whole point of this is like how much talent can you acquire in an offseason? Whether it be from the portal or from high school ranks. And LSU is constantly in the top 10 and top 5 in recruiting, and Ole Miss was not. They're around 20 every single year, right? And not bad recruiting class, just like not, you know, where he made his hay was in the portal. And now you're in a spot where they've already promised him what they're going to spend on the portal roster every year. Who's not going to want to come to LSU?
Juice.
What did you? Oh my God. I thought you said something else.
No, the dog.
I was like, good Lord.
The dog stayed at Oxford. Well, that was probably not against his choice, but no, you led me right into that. I know this is like completely on a different stratosphere, but the only comparison I can think, and I just realized what you thought I said, which I did not say, but the only comparison I can make. And again, it's a different stratosphere because it's Kiffin and all that. But it wasn't that long ago, and it was a hell of a scene and a game. Dan Mullen left behind the best team possibly ever in Mississippi State, went to Florida, and wouldn't you know it, I think it was the first conference game of the year was Florida at Mississippi State. So that was that was a pretty hostile environment. It's going to have nothing on this one though.
It's also it's crazy to me because we've seen this happen so many times where it's like, dude, Lane's coaching at Bama for the first time since he came, and he does the whole get your popcorn ready bullshit and like all that stuff goes for fourth down like 18 times. Then we saw him go back to Tennessee. We saw him go back to Tennessee when he was at Bama. Now he's going to be going back to Ole Miss. It's like, dude, this guy is like he is like if Will Muschamp was talented, like he is. He has been around the league. It's him, Bobo. Who was that old fat guy? John Chavis was around forever. Yeah. It was like these like lifers in the SEC. I used to joke about this all the time. No one laughed, but like everyone talks about how we need term limits in like Congress and the Senate and shit like that. And it's like, no, we need it in SEC assistant coaches because there's just no reason that Mike Bobo has been in Auburn, South Carolina, and Georgia all within the last 5 years. But yeah, Kiffin is like some transformer of all those guys combined, just at the head coaching level.
right, and last thing. So I just thought of this. Because we all, breaking news here, Chris.
Oh boy.
Kiffin likes attention, and he likes to be liked, right?
Yeah, same.
He will be beloved in LSU. But everywhere is going to hate his ass. Now, maybe that's not that different than it has been. But I think it's on a different level. Will that get to him, you think? Will he embrace being the villain of college football?
Yeah.
Or could it derail him?
I think it's a great question. You and I talked about this on the phone yesterday. And I think that one of the things that's been great about – what Kiffin has been able to do, sorry, there's like actual breaking news and shit going on over here. Nothing major, but like there's like something he said, like we all sat there and he was the most hated person in college football, especially in SEC football for a very long time. And we saw him with like when he was at Bama, I remember writing this, it was when I first started. And I was like, someone's like, what do you think about Lane Kiffin being the OC at Bama? And I was like, it reminds me of like if I was watching the movie The Patriot and that dickhead British general switched sides in the middle of the movie. I'd be like, I don't know. I hate this guy. So like, but he was the most hated person. Then he gets to Oxford and it's like in this weird, like, I don't like compilation of things that all factored in where it's like, oh, Ole Miss is non-threatening. So like they don't ever win a bunch. So it's like, that's kind of cool that they're good. They have these cool ass new like powder blue jerseys. That's pretty sick. Kiffin seems to be like getting better, getting healthier. He's not being as much of a dickhead. He's like, he's coming off like way more like personable and nice. And he's got these little quirks that like, again, make him more likable, like the yoga shit, the dog stuff, whatever. Like all that stuff. And we were all cheering for him. Like for the first time, I think in his life, everyone was actually pulling for him and he was at his best. When he's been at his worst and he's been his own worst enemy is when he was at Tennessee and saying like, we're going to go beat Florida. Like the first day of the press conference, like when he was at Bama telling Saban like, I'm the only reason you even got here. And like some of the moments that he's had over the course of his career where he's openly been an asshole, which is hard not to be when everyone's being an asshole to you. Like I get that. I do it in here every week. Like, but I do wonder if he leans into this villain role and whether or not that does impact how he coaches, because he has been so great in his own personal life and growth as a professional as well. And everyone's loved him. And now, just like that, in a matter of a couple of weeks, everyone is back to hating him. And so I do wonder if that messes with his psyche at all, or if it fucking, he just goes in like the demon mode and somehow just like becomes like the most unstoppable force in this conference. Cause they're going to, dude, the crop of recruiting talent in the state of Louisiana in the next 2 years is arguably better than it's ever been in back-to-back classes in the past 10 to 20 years, maybe ever. Like, there's so much talent in the state. Every quarterback in the country is going to want to play for him. And if he can't find one, Mike, he's going to go to fucking Division II and find someone that is like an all-SEC or all-American caliber player like he did with Trinidad Chambliss. Like, this, I think, is going to be an unstoppable force. And if he finds anybody, like if Blake Baker doesn't take the Tulane job and stays it and coaches the defense, I mean, this is going to be a nightmare for a lot of teams that have to face him. And I don't think there's a starting point where it's like, remember when Saban took over at Bama and said, well, they lost to Louisiana Monroe their first year. I don't think the hiccups are going to happen in year one with Lane. Because it's not his first time being a head coach, for one. He's kind of in his prime as a head coach, and he's not walking into a roster like he was at Ole Miss, even where it's like, we gotta turn this whole thing around and like where I'm taking over a dumpster fire. You know what I mean?
Right. All right. Well, when people ask me about you, Chris, I say the same thing. This guy's an unstoppable force. So we appreciate you stopping by. Latest Marler Monday on a Tuesday. You want to plug anything before you go?
Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, for the Jews out there. See ya.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.